The Buddha on the altar is called the Earth Witness Buddha. It's a Buddha has his hand on the ground, you know, his left hand on the ground, right hand on the ground, right hand on the ground, saying that basically, Earth, witness my resolve, I will not be moved. And it represents a Buddha under the Bodhi tree, kind of feeling like he's being attacked by the forces of Mara, basically all his defilements, you know, in the scripture, you know, he describes, you know, enticing women, people throwing, you know, trying to hack him, you know, hurt him. So basically all his fears and desires. And it's Earth witness my resolve, I will not be moved. And a lot of training is how do we not be moved by what we experience in life, in the sense where we feel like we have to leave our sitting place and feel like there's something going wrong. And a good principle to always keep in mind that points us to the Buddha's enlightenment is wherever you are, to remind yourself it's good to be here. No qualification. Wherever you are, from a Buddhist point of view, you know, just like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, well, that wasn't a good place to be. I mean, he felt like, can I go and have a quiet walk somewhere, eat something nice, do something, get away from feeling all this difficulty? And just to realize you don't have to be moved by it, and that there's something very positive going on, helps us actually turn things around. And it's a simple thing, whatever's going on, you know, somebody's upset with you, something's angry, how do we sit still and realize it's okay? And you have to then listen to yourself, what are you saying that it's not okay? Because that's the delusion. It's on a practical level, and that may not be okay, but not in the deeper sense. I mean, the fact that there's a problem is okay. That's what life is full of. It's not like, you know, just that it's a problem, that there's a problem. I mean, that's part of life, as it keeps coming up. But you can be at peace with having a problem, same way as you could, just like somebody was just telling me about getting two flats after leaving the Priory yesterday.
And you, two?
I think two, wasn't it two?
Yeah.
Two flats.
That's
but on the other hand, you know, they were mentioning how they were reminding themselves that it was okay, you know, to have two flats, you know, which is applying the Dharma and seeing it a bit more with the Dharma eyes than just those eyes where nothing good is, you know, or the mind that's telling yourself, how could I have driven, you know, made this mistake, when obviously nobody's trying to, you know, whenever I drive, I do have a strong wish not to hit anything. I don't have to wonder. I don't have to kind of go, Kinray, be good, don't hit anything. You know, it's already there. I don't want to hit anything. So if I hit anything, it's not because I wanted to. It usually just means that something else is going on, either for whatever reason I'm distracted, somebody else did something, I miscalculate, or like in yesterday's condition, sometimes just things are dark and wet and hard to see at night and you have an accident. And a lot of training, and it turns things around, because often we're looking for, like there's kind of spiritual teaching kind of sometimes passed around and sometimes taught in Buddhism, where you're supposed to kind of find happiness through the richness of your everyday life. Like savor this, enjoy that, have this, you know, be doing that. The trouble with that is that you're going to keep getting the reverse frequently. You know, just like, you know, you savor, just like I was talking to someone who, you know, somebody was telling me their partner is on a feeding tube, and he just, you know, he had almost said that life without food won't be worth living. One of those people, and I kind of go, well, who knows? He may never be able to eat again. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And it doesn't have to cause suffering. Because really, that's not the real thing we're seeking in life. And actually, the whole Buddha story is the fact that the Buddha was a prince. You know, he was living a good life. And you can almost see, as I remember reading this, somebody said, you can almost see if it was a modern life, he would be sent to a psychologist. Why can't you adjust and just enjoy being a prince? I mean, what is the problem in being, you know, like, you know, you have this wonderful wife, you know, which he, you have a child, you have this great life. Why are you shaving, walking out of a pal, thinking about letting go of all this? And it's because the Buddha actually confronted old age, disease, death, and assigned in a month the four signs. And he realized that the richness of life really doesn't matter. Just like all those things you enjoy when you're suffering, what does it matter? You know, if you're sick, the fact that you ate a great meal a week ago, you could have just dropped the great meal. It doesn't matter. You know, it has no real importance anymore. How many good meals have all of you eaten?
Hundreds. Thousands.
You know, it's lots and lots.
You know, just like, and if you're suffering, what difference did it matter that you had a good meal before? And if you're hungry, you can't eat that meal either. You know, it's like, you know, you have to just, you know. And it's kind of seeing through the Buddha, just as a prince was seeing through the fact that there's an inherent meaninglessness and emptiness in all those things. It's why when we're really suffering, we actually lose our appetite. Minor suffering, you eat that pint of Ben and Jerry's. Deep suffering, Ben and Jerry's, it doesn't even entice you. For those who are enticed by Ben and Jerry's, which include a good percentage of the people probably in this room, or whatever it is that is your distraction, the thing that you can get pleasure from. And you have to realize how empty the pleasure is. You know, just like you can't, you know, in a short time, you can't keep eating. You know, in fact, when I mindfully, if I'm too mindful with the dessert, it stops even being that enjoyable. It's like, it starts breaking down. You know, the same way as I can even, you know, you can have the same thing with a lot of the pleasures in life. Just like everybody experiences it with sex. It's like, okay, after a while, it's just, what is it? You know, it doesn't, in fact, thinking about it becomes much more than the thing is frequently. The reality, you know, in your head, it's much better. You know, because the reality, after a while, gets a degree of disenchantment with, in most cases, to some extent or other. And, you know, in the story of the Buddha, of him seeking his enlightenment, you know, his father had the normal reaction. Why would you want to do this? You know, what is it that you're seeking to do? But on the other hand, his very kingdom that he would have inherited actually got conquered in his lifetime. So he saw his whole family, the whole aristocracy, whoever were the people in charge, you know, dispossessed, you know, because, you know, and had a deal, you know, with that, and probably would have happened if he hadn't become a monk, even though he probably didn't help things by having a lot of his relatives, a lot of people from the Shakyas, which is his kingdom in his family. A lot of them became monks, so who knows? And they have, but on the other hand, historically, it was a small kingdom surrounded by larger kingdoms. So, you know, it's the nature of things, that things, you know, you look at, just like most of us know, and I know very little about Indian history, but things kept going on, you know, just like when I was in India, they had the pillars of, all the pillars, the way you knew all the holy sites of the Buddha in India are Ashoka's pillars, because they're often still there, where he put up a pillar saying, this is where the Buddha was enlightened, this is where the Buddha was born, this is where the Buddha died. And they're still, most of them are still there to some extent. Most of them have some deterioration. But, you know, they, or if nothing else, they say, this is where Ashoka's pillar was, when it's not there. And there's usually other things in Ashoka from there. But he conquered almost all of India. And then realized, wow, why did I do that? Because he realized how many people died and how much, and he had a change of heart and supported Buddhism, actually the other religions too. You know, he wasn't just a Buddhist. I think that was what meant the most to him. You know, and just like, you know, often you, the normal psychological approach is, okay, why don't you just try to enjoy what you can enjoy? Find pleasure in what you can find pleasure in. Seek the happiness you can kind of grab. You know, the lower level, grab the gusto. You know, kind of do something that you find exciting, exhilarating, all of that. But there's kind of emptiness to most of those things. Just like I remember traveling a lot until it became ho-hum, another country. You know, it's like, oh, this is beautiful, but so what? You know, which happens if you're, you know, just like I always smile at people. A normal experience at Shasta Abbey is people come there and for a while they really are fascinated by the mountain because you have that amazing view of Mount Shasta. So you get there and you kind of, wow, that mountain. And you look at it. After a while, it's just another mountain. You know? Every so often you look at it and think, wow, that's impressive. But most of the time, you know, you don't look at it. Just like when I've been in beautiful areas, after a while, you just take it for granted. Almost like the way we often take the people around us for granted. You know, we have, you know, we take everything for granted unless we work at not doing it. It becomes sort of mundane. Oh, this person loves me, so what? You take it for granted. It no longer even matters to you. You know, it matters, but you're not most of the time paying much attention to it. And just like I was, like somebody I remember reading was saying that, you know, if Shakyamuni Buddha was around today, he'd be taken to a psychotherapist who would feel like your feelings of dissatisfaction is an inability to accept reality. You know, like there's something wrong that you have to adjust to. And, you know, and then if that didn't work, let's try some mood-enhancing drugs, you know, serotonin stuff. Let's do something that will make you a productive, well-adjusted member of society. And while you know, and from a Buddhist point of view, it's not wrong to enjoy what's passing through. But it's also important to realize that it's empty and not important. Same way as you're going to be having a potluck, I saw a lot of nice food in, a lot of desserts, you know, and a lot of things that are nice to eat. And it's not wrong to enjoy it, not wrong to get pleasure, but it's also important to realize it doesn't matter. You know, it's not important. You know, and if you really look at it, even the simple things, you know, just like most of you have heard me say, but it's very true, that if you really want to have a meal be wonderful and taste amazingly good. Just be very hungry. Everything tastes good when you're really, really hungry. You know, a peanut butter sandwich will taste better than probably anything on this potluck if you're hungry enough. Just like if you're thirsty enough, water is actually what you want. And it's about as good a drink as you can get if you're really thirsty. I remember, just miscalculating on a backpacking trip where it took me a while to get where I'm out of water, and it took a long time. Probably the only time in my life I've ever had it that long where I was really, because I'm carrying the 40-pound pack, and I miscalculated and I'm out of water, and I had to hike for quite a while before I had water, and it was like, water's quite good. But of course, once you've had it, it's like, okay, so what? I had water. Once that feeling is gone. And in a way, if we're not careful, if we're just seeking happiness at that level, what it really means is it'll be actually, in a way, not noticing that there's a quiet desperation there. Because it's not satisfying. There's things that you're afraid of. The discontent that's there because you can't keep enjoying this stuff. And life keeps giving us conditions we don't want. Our body doesn't go. Plus, we have old age, disease, and death. And, how do I enjoy dementia? How do I enjoy this? But actually, you can. And that's, the purpose of training is, it's like I was just looking at something, actually coming up with another talk, because I'm going to do a talk at this gathering, and I was using the line, nothing is me and nothing is mine, when you hit a problem. A way of realizing these are just conditions and I don't possess them. It's like I don't possess the flat tires, it's just a passing condition if your tires are flat. And you don't have to get caught up. It doesn't have to be a problem. It's just something you deal with. And in a way, just reflects off the mirror of your life. And you realize it doesn't matter, something keeps you up at night. Something is painful. And there is kind of... And that desperate... Because what's the accompanying is, if you want to just relish in the little pleasures life give you, what do you do when they're not pleasures? You can't have a good principle in Buddhism is always realizing the reverse is there. If you want to take delight in the pleasure, what do you do when it's the reverse? A difficulty, a pain, a hardship. Just like I've seen people actually get really, and we've all done this, haven't you ever gone out to eat with somebody who's really upset with what they're being served? It's like, no, I was expecting to enjoy this. Instead, I'm being given something that's not what I wanted. And it doesn't just happen in restaurants. Just like, talking about a car getting flat, your body having problems, there'll be a presidential election. What you want may not happen. That's the nature of reality, and how do you deal with it without being desperate? And you get notice of that, and the liberation is that none of these things really bind you if you learn to let go. The same way as just applying the Dharma to having flat tires can free you from a lot of the difficulty. And realize there is no difficulty in having flat tires. It's just, that's what you're doing right now. You're dealing with the flat. Just like I remember I got a flat tire in the middle of nowhere, camping in about the most remote, right where I was camping, so it was about as remote as you could be. And I remember just thinking, okay, this is how I'm about to spend the day. I kind of knew this is going to take a lot just to get myself towed out of there. Because to my great annoyance, I amazingly found out that my lug wrench that had been sitting behind my seat in my pickup truck for the last 15 years didn't fit the lug nuts on my tires. I thought, why did I had never thought to check. You know, it just never occurred to me that I have the wrong lug wrench. that it came with the truck. I mean, I didn't. Which I bought literally, God, it's a long time ago, you know, bought it 15 years ago. And I've never changed the tire, never had a need to change a tire. And I just thought, oh, well, that wasn't too bright of me. But and often we prize ourselves in what we can do, and again get caught up in what we're accomplishing, what we're doing, what we're doing. And in the end, we have to actually see, yes, it's good, we're doing something every day. You're doing stuff, and it's good to do good stuff rather than, you know, to do what will bring positive benefit to yourself and others, all the rest. But in the end, again, we have to see that's empty, just like I have to realize, you know, usually I have a reasonable list of things to do. And I realize if I get sick, it's amazing, the world will get by without me doing anything. In fact, Molly will even be happier. She likes it when I'm sick. So there's benefit to it. You know, kid can pay a lot more attention to my cat. Who wonders, why am I not doing this all the time? Because in her life, proper world for Molly would be, this lap should be available lot much, much more than it is. And the sense that there's something more and that we're willing to follow it. And a lot of Buddhist training is okay, we're looking in the direction that the Buddha taught. How do we grow what they will call in Buddhism the seed of Bodhi? How do we grow our spiritual life? Because it's one thing to do it, but how do we make it real for ourselves? And that actually takes a lot of, that's what Buddhist training is about, that you're growing that seed. You're growing something. And that means you have to treat it like it's of great importance. Like if you don't treat your spiritual life like it's a treasure, like that very word, the three treasures, I guarantee it won't work. You know, you can kind of treat it matter-of-factly or like, oh, you know, I mean, you can do that, but it just won't do that well. That's what it'll be. You'll have something, you know. Yeah, it'll be a little niche in your life. You know, it's comforting, it's there, it helps, and that's positive. But it won't really solve the bigger things, and when you hit major problems, it won't do that much because it's just a little section of your life. Just like I remember when I was in college, one of my roommates used to tell me, oh, I love reading Zen books. It's kind of inspirational. I say, well, you do anything? She says, oh, no, I wouldn't do anything. I just like reading the books. And that's a positive thing. I mean, it is, it's setting a seed of something, but it won't grow unless you grow it and put energy and treat it like it's important. Like, you know, like the Buddha had to do. And we're not all going to walk out, you know, like the Buddha did. But still, to really take it to heart. So, and to try to grow that seed, to grow our spiritual life and treat it like it's a real gift, and that it will be that which will help us when we hit the difficulties. You know, of course, what's going to help us if we have cancer, we have problems, somebody we love dies, and, you know, I'll talk to somebody, you know, it's where, sadly enough, they don't have a refuge. It's like, they can't even deal with, like, you know, this person dying is sort of, I don't know what to do, how to even to look at the situation. And it's kind of sad, because at that they haven't, since they haven't put any effort in looking deeper when it comes up, all it is despair and I don't want this. And sometimes people just tell me how much they don't want something. And I go, kind of go, well, that's sad. I mean, naturally you don't want it, but we're taking to heart that all the negative conditions are going to come up. You know, just like, you know, if I get old, I'll fall apart. I'm hoping it goes in a relatively smooth way, but it's completely out of my hands how my falling apart is going to happen, whether I go through a lot of difficult, painful stuff, or I have it. Yeah. You know, that kind of death we all probably would like, where we live old, we never get too decrepit, and then we just pass away quietly. I mean, that's most people's, like, okay, that's about as good as I can do. But of course we don't control that. It's just due to karma, you know, whether we'll do it. Just like nobody says, I want dementia. You know, I've never met that person who looks forward to dementia. But on the other hand, I see with people in dementia, what they've set up in their life is what they have when they have dementia. The person's there and they're dealing with it the same way as they were dealing with everything else in their life. And if they were doing well, you know, and been doing, in a way, taking life to heart. And it's like, I remember my, just as when I was a small child, my grandmother got dementia. And after a while, she didn't even know who you were. But she was actually always happy to see you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, anybody have any comments as I'm talking on? Silenced everyone? No desperation out there?
It's just quiet. Yeah.
You can speak up. Did you have something?
I really liked your dedication at the ceremony this morning, and when you said, I mean, the whole thing was very beautiful, but one thing in particular that stood out for me was you mentioned that here's the Buddha sitting in meditation, and there's demons. I mean, he's got demons. We all have demons, and you mentioned it, like, we all have demons, and demons are not necessarily a light, easy thing to deal with. You can have this, you know, karma that feels heavy and deep and demonic. So yeah. It was, that's what it feels like sometimes.
Oh yeah, people, that's what strong karma is. You know,
strong
people
karma.
Being
yeah, that's
overwhelmed.
A nice way to put it.
I mean,
yeah.
We all have things that overwhelm us. I mean,
that
why do we get angry?
Strong.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, why do we get angry or have any of these strong, really, emotions that come up that seem to overwhelm us? And it's just like, you know, probably, you know, I could, you know, get bad enough news, I'll be over, can be over, you know, I assume I can be overwhelmed by, if you give me the right mixture of karma, you know, I'll probably think, okay, this is more than I can handle. But on the other hand, I was like, I remember somebody saying where they kind of were being talking to a senior monk who was saying, you know, I'm finding all this stuff overwhelming and way too much. And the person said, well, if you want to make spiritual progress, you have to deal with too much. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want it all in manageable, like manageable chunks, like I want my difficulties to be manageable. They're not too hard to deal with. Well, actually, life and the real progress is when we get the unmanageable parts, the ones that, God, I hate this. You know, this gut level, I don't want something. And then, you know, then we're converting something that's really important, you know. And we can learn that it isn't a problem, you know, that actually, it can wash away. And the nice thing about training is, whatever the difficulties are, in the, like in the scripture of great wisdom. In the mind of the Bosatsu, who is truly one, the obstacles dissolve. If you sit still, the obstacles dissolve, because there's really nothing there. You know, it's like we make it, you know, and those gut-level reactions don't have to be there. You know, they're not fixed, they're just karma, and sometimes when we're willing just to accept it, it washes away. You know, because we realize, in a way, we've created all of this. You know, it's nobody's imposing suffering on us. We make it all. You know, and when you realize that, that's actually wonderful, because it means there isn't a problem out there. Since the problems are all in us, it's all solvable. There's a solution to everything. You know, and that's great news. But it also means we have to take responsibility and not find the problem out there. But realize, you know, just as I said, a good teaching is just, you're deluded if you're not grateful. Mm-hmm. Remind yourself of that. Whenever you're not grateful, that's delusion. And you say, grateful for what? Doesn't the gratitude, you know, isn't for anything specific. The gratitude is the fact that it's good to be here. Mm-hmm. This, you're on the path. You're on your way to where you need to go spiritually. And there isn't a problem, even if you're kind of with two flat tires or with somebody upset with you or somebody dying. Or you're dying. But sooner or later, you'll be that person. And you can realize that it's good to be here. And there's something very liberating. You know, just like I remember, I've often used the case of someone who was dying of bone cancer in great pain because more pain medication would kill her. And she just said, this is the best I've ever been in my life. Mm-hmm. And she meant it. You looked at her face and she was glowing. You know, and you know, there's something to be grateful for. We all have the heart of a Buddha. We can thank a boundless place if we want and realize that birth and death doesn't bind us. How we feel doesn't bind us. It's just almost like changeable weather. You know, and most of us are lucky enough that the weather doesn't really bind us. You know, it's like looked at the weather report and saw, I'm going to be in the Santa Cruz Mountain next week. You always get those weather reports where 6 inches of rain in those. So I looked, it's like, it's not that bad next week. So, but if it was, I would think, oh well, that's, it's nice to get the rain. Mm-hmm. I'd be grateful for the rain. And, and that's one of the great things in Buddhism is how we, that really is transformative about Buddhism that isn't in a lot of other spiritual teachings and often isn't fully understood by a lot of religions is how much suffering can point us to the truth and is a vehicle that can help us and isn't a problem. The fact that things aren't the way that we want them isn't really a problem. It's just, there's karma. And but we're not being bound by it. We bind ourselves with the karma. It's not happening. It's not like, you know, when you worry about, am I going to get good karma? You realize, we're actually realizing, in a way, it'll be okay no matter what unfolds. And that way we can be at peace no matter what's unfolding. You know, and we realize we're not being bound by, wow, I got, you know, just like an expression that I grew up with that was really common for my parents' generation, at least, to be saying, if you have your health, you have everything.
Yeah.
And I told my mother, I remember my mother saying that to me after, you know, I said, I know people with good health who just committed suicide. And I know people with bad health who are happy. But you can just take one of these things. I mean, you know, like, and realize, yeah. And I've known somebody who comes here, you know, mother lived to her 90s and always had dreadful health. And she said, but her mother was always this bright, positive person, despite the bad health. And you realize it's not the health that determines it. You know, it's, yes, we don't want good health. I even heard, like, a doctor who had studied it, showing how that people often, when they've been, have an illness and a condition for a long enough time, usually adjust to it and learn how it's not a problem. It takes quite a, you know, it takes a block of time to adjust, but you're paralyzed, you know, whatever the condition is, you can learn to adjust and realize it doesn't, it's not making you suffer to some extent. And, you know, and then we cultivate the opposite of what the Buddha, you know, Buddha's teaching by cultivating what actually does feel good in a way more than just seeking pleasure and savoring something is, which is just kindness, generosity, you know, and the positive virtues, which actually feel much better. Just think of when you're, we've all had that warm feeling when we really could help somebody. You know, when you're able to give and just connect with somebody. You know, and those things happen much more, because when you're not, one of the things that binds us is our self-centeredness, our selfishness, the importance we give ourselves. And training means you're lightening that load, which means one of the ways we're learning we're not being bound by it is by not treating what happens to us as a big deal. You know, just seeing it as a condition. Just realizing, you know, and just looking around you and realizing everyone's, first of all, everyone's having difficulty. You know, and if they don't think they're having difficulty, they're usually in a fog. Because life is, you know, they're just taking it for granted that this should be, that I should hate this or not want this or be afraid of this. Again, it's like Thoreau in the 1840s talking about most people are living lives of quiet desperation. And you think, wow, New England in the 1840s. Mm-hmm. You know. And people think modern life is creating all these problems.